Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and Amberly Grant is hanging out with me today. How are you?
What's up? I'm good.
It's good to see you. And we were just catching up for a little while before recording the sound check, and then we recorded a sound check, and it's been a while. So I'm really glad you're here. It's good to have you in the studio.
Yes. I feel like my evolution of Phi and life has been through this podcast. Like, actually. I feel like I came on like, what, 3.5 years ago or something, or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And I am at a very different place, hence one of our topics today, than I was 4 years ago. Holy moly.
Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking, and I will say sort of the topic of today is things that we've changed our minds on because of Phi, like learning about Phi, and this, you know, spans over several years. And at the time that we're recording this, it's July of 2026. And in a few days, we're both going to be at Camp Phi, which I believe that's like one of the first times we met and hung out, right?
Literally,
at Camp Phi.
I remember meeting you at Camp Phi.
Okay.
Yeah. I can tell that story and maybe at an intro another time. Yeah. I remember meeting you at Camp Phi. I remember our first conversation. You had a beer in your hand. We were beside the white fridge in the room. Yeah. Do you remember this?
100%.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you're super interesting. I actually really enjoy talking. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Then that means I didn't enjoy talking to a lot of people at Camp Phi. I have a lot of friends from that Camp Phi, Andy being one of them. But I was like, oh, this, I hope that this person and I become friends one day.
And we're friends now. Are. Yeah. Yeah. 100% remember. And I was like, I wonder if we met before, because what I remember is having a beer, which happened the whole time. I remember having a beer and us chatting, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're interesting too. So yeah, we have become friends, and so many things have changed since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're back in the studio, and we have a handful of things that we're going to get into today around how our like ideas have shifted.
Yeah.
I will hit sort of the signpost here. So one area for me is like how much to save and how much you need for retirement, the idea of retiring as soon as possible, how much to spend in retirement. And then you have a couple that you wanted to mention too. I don't know the signpost, but you could kick those off. Yeah.
Yeah. That money is actually the easiest part of our entire FI journey. Lifestyle creep is a good thing. Within that, I think it's how someone else did this isn't the way that we need to do it. And perhaps that's not really a signpost, but something I just wrote. And then I'm really struggling with something, and I'm going to hold that in my back pocket until the end and explain what that is.
All right. So we have a lot to go through here. And I thought about this just because I, like I said, we've shifted and we have changed a lot, even in the few years that we've known each other. And that was all like after you and I knew a lot about Phi. We'd been like sort of indoctrinated and understand the main concepts, and we lived it for years. And as we're going through, we're like, oh, actually, I don't know if I agree with what I thought previously. And then I thought a little bit farther back, like what I thought I needed to save in my 20s, totally different than what we're looking at now. So I think we could just get right into it. I will preface and say that much like when we were having drinks in Camp Phi, I have a beer. I brought a beer down. A lot of times I record in the morning, but it's the afternoon now.
It is. So. You know, I was going to bring a cider because we never drink when we record. And yeah, I was like, I'm really into drinking right now.
you've been not drinking for a bit, but
So I have like a cider every night for the past three nights. I've drank for three nights straight, and that's like not normal for me.
Let's do it. So, can we get you a ride? We have other liquor here. I know you're not a beer drinker, but we got we can make a beverage.
Yeah, why don't we make a, should we make a beverage real quick? Are we allowed
to
like pause?
Yeah, we could pause.
Okay, keep this in.
Hold on, I'll hit pause. All right, we just ran upstairs and we looked at the Bev drawer.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of stuff in there. So what do you got?
I have a margarita, a passion fruit and prickly pear. It looks amazing. I apologize to anyone in about 30 minutes when I am quite loose-tongued. Is that a thing? Is that the saying?
I don't know if it means what you think it means.
Yeah, no. I don't know either. I think I might have just said something I shouldn't have said on air. Okay, I'm going to crack it now.
Yeah, do it. All right.
There we go.
It's a satisfying noise.
Yeah.
All right. So we like to have fun around here. And with no sponsors, we could just stop and do whatever we want. Yeah. So that was great. Cheers. Thanks for having a drink
You're welcome. I'm 21, you know, just if anyone's wondering.
So, first one, how much to save and how much you need for retirement. So, as far as the savings rate, I got my guidance early from a Northwestern Mutual salesperson selling me insurance. He was also a CFP and gave some advice. It wasn't all horrible, but I think he was probably like, if you save like 15 to 20%, like that's really good, which actually that's pretty
great
decent.
Advice.
Yeah, not bad. And I basically did that. Now, fast forward after I met Elizabeth and we got married and all that, she had a much better approach, a much like stronger foundation. But basically we kept our expenses roughly stable and we never really tracked it, but eventually our savings rate got up to like 50 or 65%. Mm-hmm. And as I've mentioned, like the shift and the change, like at this point, like I'm selling equities and like we're spending money and I've sort of like decoupled the savings rate. So our savings rate's like zero.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're no longer in accumulation phase, right? Like some people, I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast, you know, are quite FI savvy. But, you know, you have different phases and it's like accumulation versus just kind of maybe coasting for a while where like savings rates doesn't matter as much. Maybe you're not actually saving much, but you're just compounding over time. And then there's decumulation. And that's what you're kind of in right now, I assume. You do have income, so you're probably more flat, I assume, right now.
From, let's see, actually, no. So there's only a tiny amount of like income from
the podcast, your stuff.
Yeah. So very small amount. Mm-hmm. However, like to your point, because we have our portfolio, there is some dividend payments, which actually amounts to like tens of thousands of dollars, right? So there is that income, but
and you're
overall,
just taking those now. Is that correct? Like you're just taking dividend payments and then you're selling equities.
Correct.
So you're no longer reinvesting dividends.
Correct.
And just selling equities.
Yep.
I love the nuance of it because I think a lot of people know that there's decumulation. You just sell things, but like what does that look like, right? So thank you for giving a bit more
And there is like
color.
The order of operations, right? So it's like we're doing that from post-tax brokerage because we're in our 40s. So our pre-tax, like anything or our Roth IRAs, those are, you know, kind of locked in.
Untouchable-ish.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So that was kind of like my savings rate idea. And
are you taking Roth contributions?
No.
Okay.
Nope. And we don't. Yeah. I'm trying to think if that would even be a good move right now. I guess.
I think it's like one for one.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So you could. My whole thing with the Roth contributions is like, it's like $3,000 to $5,000 per year per person. Like that's nothing.
Right. Yeah. We have like overall our Roths were very small. So, I mean, I think right now mine only has like $50,000 in it or something like that. So yeah, the contributions were like
a few
thousand dollars.
Yeah. Well, and now like, I think it's 7,000, right? 7,500, right? So like it's getting bigger, but also things are more expensive. So, but anyhow, that's very cool. You were saving, or your guidance was 15 to 20% of saving. You obviously way over did that to get to where you are today. Looking back, would you have wanted to start slower or faster with your savings? Or do you feel like you were at the perfect rate?
Yeah, great question. I think I should have saved more sooner. And I would have put more into my Roth. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I house hacked. I had a roommate. Mm-hmm. You know what I did with the money? I just blew it at restaurants. Like, I did not, like, pay off anything early.
Yeah.
Everything worked out fine. But, like, I definitely could have done a better job, like, saving more. And over time, like, we ended up saving more just because we didn't buy a huge new house when we were able to.
Yeah.
We just, like, stayed in the one we were in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the retirement side, I had no clue how much to save. And I think, you know, my insurance salesman, the advisor at the time, probably gave me some guidance. I actually don't really remember, but he was probably like, if you save this, you'll be able to retire at a normal time. But once I learned about the 4% rule, I was like, this is awesome. There's actually like, there's something to follow. And I think the 4% rule is great for accumulation to mm-hmm. get you in the right ballpark. And then after that, it's a lot more nuanced. Like maybe you're going to have a part-time job, or yes. maybe you decide that you're going to live in a much cheaper place and you oversaved. The only thing we know is like whatever you plan, it's going to be different because your assumptions are based on what you know at that time. Mm-hmm. And fast forward like a decade or two, I mean, it's going to be completely different. So, so I think it's great for accumulation, but like once you get to a certain point, you have to consider so many other things. So my thoughts have shifted on that, but you know, 4%, it's a good guideline, and I understand why we use it as shorthand.
Yeah. And I think it's funny that we get into such nuanced, it's so fi to get into such nuanced debates between like 3.5 or 4 or 5 or 6, because the truth is that everyone's situation is different. And something that, like, I get it, but real estate, right? Do you have real estate income? Are you going to be selling a property? That's an entirely different bucket to start pulling from or doing things from than someone who's just invested in equities, right? Are you invested in like pre-IPO stocks, right? We know someone who does that. Like, there is very nuanced conversations, and we never want to rely on it, but a lot of people I have found in the FI community are getting quite large inheritances. Not everyone. But that is also a part of the conversation. We don't know that, like, down the line, there may be more things coming your way. Like you said, you don't know what 10, 20, 30 years looks like. And so it's a fantastic ballpark. But I do think that if you don't change your mindset from the first time you've decided what FI looks like in those calculations, then you've done yourself a disservice. Mm-hmm. Because you should probably reevaluate what your personal situation is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And... yeah, one of the big points is just like there's a very broad brush in a lot of different areas that people could focus, whether it's like equities, or maybe some people are just like, I'm only doing Roth stuff, and they're yep. super into it. There's a ton of different ways. I'm not super into real estate.
That's a job.
I dislike it. Yeah, I dislike real estate.
Yeah.
But other people, like you, you dig it, right?
I mean, that's part of my, like, I don't know. I am actually at the point now that if someone were to offer me my properties, I probably would say no thank you and move on. But I think I'm in a big fuck it phase.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't think it'll last too long. Like, I've had 3 nights of cider. I'm going on my 4th right now. So,
and tomorrow it sounds like you may have
I'll probably have a drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah, I guess I'm coming. So I do think I'm just trying to simplify my life and the commitments I have outside myself. So I decided to start that travel business. But no, like...
but aside,
like,
from that.
Yeah, aside from that. But what I'm trying to do is like biggest bang for the buck, right? And how do I go live the life I actually want to? And I think real estate may not be a part of it. Though, since my properties make so much money and I chose very well, I'm not getting rid of them. And the Denver market's down massively.
Right.
So selling right now would not make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So I think one good way to approach our list here, and we're working this out on the fly.
Love it.
I think we can go back and forth because we don't necessarily have the same things that we've changed our minds on. So do you want to hit your first one, and then we'll swing back to my, and we'll tag team it?
And I just want to say, I also changed my mind on this, like retirement amounts. Funny enough, like when I read that, I was like, oh yeah, duh. Again, everyone should. What you think in your 20s when you maybe discover FIRE, or even 30s or 40s or whatever it might be, is not really the thing, right? So like for me, I remember when I first thought about it, I was sitting in this chair in community college and I was like, oh, $1 million. But I've thought about $1 million since I read The Wealthy Barber when I was 15, right? So like 1 million has been my number of like, when I'm a millionaire,
yeah,
like I've made it. And now I support a husband, 2 children, a father, like... a million doesn't cut it, right? At this time. So like, I think my FI number, including real estate, so essentially what I need is $120,000 a year to live, which like some people is like, that's insane. And that's USD. So for my CAD friends, you understand, it's more. So at least right now for the lifestyle I live. Mm-hmm. In FIRE though.
For all the people that you're supporting?
Well, and I have a cleaner, right? I have all like the lifestyle I have that I'm not willing to compromise on right now. But if I retire, I have time, so I don't need a cleaner, right? So things start to go down, but I can't get rid of my dad. That would be not appropriate, right? But so like there's things that I have obligations to for the next, just let's say, decade, but it doesn't, but like I do understand. So right now, 120,000, whatever that looks like, $3 million and or brokerages and real estate. I go to retirement, have a side job, and therefore, and maybe lower my expenses at that point. And so then maybe I don't need that much. So even within my timeline right now, in the next few years, that amount's going to change over time. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not 40,000. That's for fucking sure.
Yeah. For all the things that you were talking about, like yeah. 120 is like really cheap.
I actually think so.
Yeah. Thank it's you. Super cheap.
Yeah.
For like preschool, where we live, yeah. you have a fucking cleaner. Yeah. We don't have a cleaner.
Yeah. Well, and I've got like, and that's like, it's been an expensive season, right? Cleaner for any other parents out there that you may understand. Like I just had preschool for the first time. My kid has speech therapy issues. So we have a speech therapist every week, couples counseling every week for a little while. Cause we were having some like, we got to get back on our same page here. Sure. So like just those three things alone were over $1,000 a month. Yeah. No, over almost 2,000 a month.
Okay.
Right. So you're sense. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
And that's just it, right?
Yeah.
So it ebbs and flows.
Sure. And I was going to say one really cool thing about having people come over here mm-hmm. for these recordings is I have to clean up a little bit. Oh, so I yes. sweep and like the bathroom, I encourage you to yep. hit the bathroom.
I do every I time it. And it's so clean.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have like your little like, oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little hack. Invite people over. Yeah. And like both Elizabeth and I, our parents were like, yeah, we got to make it look like we clean. Mm-hmm. We don't live in a huge mess.
Yeah.
So,
anyhow, okay. I just wanted to say that that's how I changed my mind. Shall we go to one of my topics for changing mind? Excellent. I think that money is the easiest part of the FI journey. I know like making money can be difficult. Being at a job can be difficult. There are difficult things about the aspect of money and that and what to do with it and how to optimize it or over-optimize it. But I think it's at the most boringest conversation in the FI community. I think that's a margarita talking.
Just the joking. The most boringest.
Boy, like, I don't want to talk about money. No. I think people get stuck there. They get stuck at the withdrawal rates. And is it in what buckets is it in? What's decumulation look like? What's accumulation look like? And I'm actually much more interested and have always been more interested in the idea of who are you as a person along the journey from the start to the end. What are the relationships that you're building? What is the heart you put into everything? Have you worked on yourself and your childhood issues? And I think that is the real hack of FI is that you have the money and the time to focus on those things if you actually choose to do so.
How are we going to follow that? That was so good. I can relate to a lot of what you're talking about because if you retire early, you now have time to like work on yourself in other areas. Mm-hmm. And one of the it doesn't upset me that much, but I feel bad for people when I think they don't want to face the demons yes. and have the struggle. And they're like, it's actually much easier for me to go back to my old job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I get a great offer and maybe they could renegotiate a couple things and make themselves a little bit happier. Everyone's different. Some people love their jobs, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But at the end of the day, yeah, like you now have time to work on whatever personal project you want to work on. Mm-hmm. It could be hobbies. It could be stuff that you've put off for like so many years because you were busy working, mm-hmm. maybe raising a family. And now you have like a ton of time mm-hmm. and you could spend it on all those things. And a lot of it is like, I mean, the things you described, which I'm not doing, by the way, mm-hmm. like it's dealing with trauma, like yeah. going back to, you know, many years past where it's like shaped how you are interacting with the world, like yes. overall and your relationships too.
Yes, exactly. And I will say, I see that play out so much in the FI community, especially as being someone who I interact with a lot of the FI community in very intimate ways when it comes to money, because I deal with payments, right? And I deal with these things. And I also am on platforms. And so I get a lot of feedback and communication and I build a lot of relationships. I love people. I love learning about people and knowing about people. And I do see that a lot of people, they just jump to the next thing instead of stop and be like, what is driving me, right? What is the scarcity that is in my life? Or yeah, the traumas I experienced as a kid that is fueling the relationships I have and maybe the not so deep relationships that I can have. And I I think that is the thing I'm struggling with. That's actually funny enough, not the thing I'm struggling with, but I hinted at the very beginning. But one of the things I am struggling with, which is just because some people are not doing that, I think that it's making us as a Phi community not as rich as we actually can be. Because if we were a little bit more honest with getting that part of ourselves like figured out, I think that we can have even like we can have all the money richness and all the experience richness and then all the relationship and deepness that comes with like self-exploration. Yeah.
It's a really good one. When I first got involved in the Phi community, I guess like learning about it initially, I did have my crappy corporate job. But the thing is, I found Mr. Money Mustache's blog, read like one article on the right index portfolio, like distribution or what do you call that?
You're like stock, all the different
allocation
options. Allocations. Yes,
allocation. Yeah. That's it. So I found that and then I didn't read anything else and didn't pay attention. But the thing is, I started working for myself the next year when I got laid off. And basically after that, I was like, oh, this is fun. I actually like enjoy this. So I was still thinking, I don't want to work for a super long time. And I kind of knew that, I don't know, every 5 to 8 years, I kind of get not bored, but like you learn what you're going to learn and you kind of move on. So I kind of knew what I was doing was going to have a deadline and I would need to move on. Hence like being very interested in like actually retiring. And I know that I've learned from like Carl, 1500days.com, right? Like later on, he was like, ah, you know what? It probably wasn't the best thing to try to retire as soon as possible at all costs where like, you know, he ended up working too much at his full-time job and the live-in flips and blah, blah, blah. So we have learned from others. And basically I'm like, oh yeah, actually a slower approach really works well.
I thought when you wrote this that you thought that retiring earlier was better. And I am now in agreement with you.
Okay, great. You're ready to argue.
I was ready to be like, I think that it's to my point, and I think we can skip my point after this, essentially, we'll just talk about it now, is that how someone else did it isn't the way that you need to do it because you don't know the behind the scenes of it all, right? You don't know the sacrifices that them or their family made to get to the point they are. There could also be, let's just be honest, no sacrifices, right? It just worked out. It was perfect, the perfect timing. And for me, the retiring as soon as possible also goes into my, like, we'll talk about your second bullet here in a second, but I think the retiring as early as possible is also a mindset. It takes a while to figure that out. Like that's, I think that's what one more year syndrome ultimately is like just getting your mindset right if you're actually going towards retiring.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm in that place right now where I don't have enough for the 120K a year, let's say, but I am now finally seeing a light at the end of the tunnel of like, whoa, if I replace this type of income and then we get rid of these expenses, but we still have the life we want to live, maybe I can quit full-time work. W-2 work, not retire. And that was probably never part of my plan anyhow. I think I'm the Phi without the RE. So I like that much better. Slow it down maybe.
Yeah. And there's a lot of approaches. Like you said, like you don't have to do it the same way as other people. And I think a lot of the early bloggers were like going at a fast pace. And some people felt like it was more of a sacrifice than others. Some people were like, yeah, I'm just living exactly normally and my expenses happen to be fairly low and I stopped whenever I wanted and everything's great. Yep. So it was like an easy transition. But yeah, I think basically sprinting towards retiring usually isn't the best move. And especially if you have a horrible job, it's like you should probably just quit your job and find something that's not as horrible.
Because it's life. Man, like, I don't know what your views on the afterworld are, but like, from my understanding right now, this is what I've got, right? Who knows? And so why suffer so much in that way? We just had the HQ talk that we just talked about, where I talked about travel. And something I just want to talk about here, which is retiring as soon as possible. I think that if you are young on the Phi journey, that actually that sprint's a very detrimental thing that you can do. Like spending your 20s only working, looking at a spreadsheet. I think I've said this like for, this is probably the thing that's been consistent for like 4 years now on this podcast. It's like, that is not the thing to be doing, right? Your 20s is for experimentation. Yes, wasting some money, maybe not wasting all of it, going and traveling and being able to go to a different country and meet friends, which will make you have cheaper expenses on the back end. Let me tell you, because like I stay with my friends. I stay with like my German friends when I go. Our families all hang out together now, and it's the most amazing thing ever. And it makes my trips to Germany is quite a lot cheaper. And I'm generous within that with, you know, with my friends and to thank them for that. But my travels in my 20s where I did like crazy things and maybe didn't work for a year and traveled the world have now paid dividends on my life. And I think have made me faster to the FI community, like FI track. And I think better within the FI community because I have looked at myself. I have been curious and have faced demons and things like that, right?
Yeah. And like I didn't do as good of a job in my 20s, but I did realize towards the end of college that working a corporate job, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't super love it. Right. So I was like, I could stay in school longer. So instead of taking like a full load, I took like the minimum number of hours.
Yeah,
so I ended up like stretching it out longer. And that was way more fun.
Right.
That was way more fun. The other thing is I had a little bit of credit card debt, not a ton, under 10,000, but I would like run it up and basically be like, this looks like an awesome trip. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do it now. So I was like, Now's the time to do it. And like, if I do this, and I mean, the opportunity passed, right? Like you don't stay in touch with all those people in your 20s. So I would take trips and I would pick up bar tabs, which is laughable now. It's like $32. And I'm like, oh my God, I spent $32. Now that's like two coffees at Starbucks or whatever.
Yes.
So
I love the picking up bar tabs because I actually think that's such a fun thing to do with friends.
Oh yeah.
Even now, as an adult. I still will be like, I got this round. I also have lived in like Australia and other places where like that is a culture.
Yeah.
Like there's a round, every person takes a round, sure. Right?
Yeah.
Which I learned on my travels in my 20s, right?
Yeah.
So anyhow, I think that's great.
Yeah. And like you said, it's still fun. Like we both went to Economy, you know, the pizza mm-hmm. place across from the Fairfield.
Yes.
So went there and there were maybe like 8 of us or something. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to pay. Like, you guys go to the Speed Friend Shipping or whatever. Yeah. I'll stay here and paid it. And some people got feathers a little ruffled. They were like, let me pay you. And I'm like, no. Yeah. So, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
And you would think it's super expensive. It was like under $200,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't nothing.
No.
But like, it was fine for what I was trying to do.
I actually think the under 200 is kind of my threshold for out hanging out events that I would be happy to pay for. I don't do it often, right? Like I'm not like, okay, guys, don't like invite me to lunch and I'm going to pay right now, right?
Everyone's going to be like, all right, standard 200.
All right, yeah, exactly. $199.99. We are going to efficiently do this. I'm also like under 200. I'm like, it's in 20 years, will I care about this $200? You have bought me a drink and I have been very grateful for it. And I like still remember, it was at a beer garden. I think it was FinCon. And you bought me a drink at the beer garden. And I thought that was so nice and generous of you.
Yeah.
So I still think about you in that generous way.
That's cool. You know what? I have a picture. It was me, you, and Diana.
Yes,
do you remember?
Correct. Yes, I remember.
So I have a picture of us together. Yeah. Yep. Crazy.
Thank you.
Small word. You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Okay. So I wonder, do you feel like we've reviewed this already within what we've talked about, but lifestyle creep is actually a good thing? I think maybe I just say that again. I don't know if we have to talk more about it.
Yeah, I think let's talk more about it and be like explicit. Yeah.
Okay. Lifestyle creep is actually a good thing, right? The people that I respect within the FI community, and I'm not saying I don't respect you if you do this, but whatever, caveat. The people I really enjoy hanging out with and spending my time with are not the people who are still living on the $40,000 a year, but are like, oh, I have little things that I'm really into now that I'm putting time and energy and money into. Your guitar habit. I thought that was so cool that you like started learning guitar and now you have like 5 guitars, I think. Oh. More since I've been here last, right? And I think it's really cool when people, like for me and myself, I literally lived off $15,000 a year at the start of my FI journey. Then I house hacked and lived off $15,000 a year. 15,000? Yeah. It was like $1,000 a month.
What year was that, by the way?
Oh, good question. I moved to Colorado in 2012.
Okay. Which really isn't that long ago. Like, not that long ago. Right. So, inflation kicked in, but I mean, we're not talking 2002 or whatever.
As everyone knows probably from this podcast, like my FI journey didn't start there because I made no money. I made like $15,000 a year. Actually made $15,500 a year. So, I didn't actually start saving till many years later. But that version of Amberly should not exist today. Because then that means that I have not grown. My social circle has not grown. My family hasn't grown. Whatever that family looks like, whether it's like friends, family, dog family, people family. It hasn't grown and nothing's changed. And that's not a life well lived in my mind, right? So to go from 15,000 a year to 120, it doesn't have to be that high. I don't care how much people spend. But living the life that you want and investing in it is very important.
I love this one because it's like totally against the grain where it's like lifestyle creep is great.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Do it. So
it turns out that I'm actually a lot more less fi now in my life than I've ever been.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, it's the evolution, which is the whole point of this episode, where you're like, I'm a little different than I was. And everyone's changing. So you could kind of steer it in the direction you want or just kind of be complacent with where you end up. And I think it's been said more often where people are talking about like values-based spending, where it's like, of course, I don't give a shit about cars.
Right.
So it would be silly if I spent a huge amount of money on a car and then I like worry about it getting scratched or something like that. But in the case where it's like, guitars, it's really cool. I'm having a fun time. Actually, in the one right in front of you, I'll have to show you. That's a new one, although it looked really similar to an old one. It's just better.
Yeah.
But it's super fun. And I'm like testing and I'm seeing like what works. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's what people should do because you don't know if like guitars are going to work for you. Maybe you don't really care and you focus on a different thing, but I'm able to test it, see how it works, and then keep doing it if I like it or stop if I don't like it anymore.
Right.
So I think there's no issue with like testing and spending more. One issue with the FI community is it's gotten better with a value-based spending idea, but it's just like the extra pride in like not spending and being so frugal. And I still do it because I'm like, I got a good deal on that guitar. Mm-hmm. And that's like that's a symptom of like the frugality, which in anything taken to the extreme is like too much.
Right.
But basically I think like if you take a little too much pride in like not spending, then you end up being like the person who's not going to pick up the tab ever.
Right.
Or you're like, oh, like we got to split this like one by one with each person, which
is an appropriate thing from time to time, or like that is the standard, right?
Yeah.
And so the generosity on top of the standard.
Yeah.
And if you only live your life by the standard, then you probably wouldn't even be a FI person.
Right.
So then flex that non-standard muscle other places in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a very nice way of like putting a bow on that.
Yes. I like it. So lifestyle creep, it's not always bad. Mm-mm. All right. Next one is retirement spending. Mm-hmm. So stick with me on this one. It's definitely a more of advanced topic. And I mean, the thing is, there's like all these debates and talk and, you know, like Karsten's 60-part series on a safe withdrawal rate, and there's great debate and all that stuff. So currently, like we're under 3% and we're trying to spend a little bit more. The thing is, we're living awesome. Like we have everything that we want. We're doing the stuff that we want to. And we feel like we're splurging often. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, in the past, like even in the last year, I'm like, we need to spend more. Like we're not spending enough.
Right.
But spending extra because you can isn't like a really good way to make that decision.
Right.
You have to consider the values that we have, going back to the last point. So I've definitely softened on that idea. And I'm like, just because you could spend 5.5%, it doesn't mean that you should try to spend 5.5% just because you can. That said, I mean, it means we could have stopped working sooner. And right. I would take that trade-off if I would have known.
Yeah.
But you can't know the future.
No. So. And I think that's what all the like people who've retired before us, and I'm still not there, and they tell me this, which is that you probably can leave earlier than you thought you could because you can't see the future. And that's a whole thing. But can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So you have the lifestyle that you want. Obviously, I'm not going to say get a cleaner because that's ridiculous, because that's my value. Yeah. Have you thought about spending on a coach or a counselor to learn more about yourself? Because perhaps the lifestyle that you have today could be even better, not necessarily monetarily, but in other ways. And that would be a good use of some money.
I haven't thought of that. It's a good suggestion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Side note, not to sidestep that actual real question, but I have, in talking to friends, I think I want to test out a cleaner. I mean, we don't mind cleaning too much,
right?
But at the same time, it's like, I literally can do anything else. Yes. And if I could not clean the bathroom before you come over here and someone else can,
yeah.
then yeah, I would do something else that's yeah. more valuable to me. One other, we have Georgie the dog.
Yes.
So we pick up her poop, but there's yeah. services that uh-huh. go in the backyard and they would clean everything up. And that's great. I mean, we would definitely want to do something besides pick up shit in our own yard. But to your point, yes, that's probably a very good suggestion where like there's some stuff where I'm like, I kind of want to do it, I think, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And if I had someone like asking the right questions and like, why are you wasting time doing this other thing that you say you don't care about, mm-hmm. but you're actually wasting time doing that.
Right. So. Or maybe you're resistant to something else. I'm just going to, this is not necessarily you. I'm not speaking to you exactly, but just something I'm hearing, right? Yeah. You guys do a lot of local trips, right? A lot yeah. of car trips. And perhaps you just don't like getting on a plane. You've got like some anxiety. I don't know. But there is a big world out there. And I'd be curious of like, oh, if you're not exploring other parts that you actually might be interested in the world, why is that? Because that is a place you can spend the rest of the 1%, right? And so that's like those little things where it's like, oh, maybe you're just not, the reason I'm not speaking to you is because that is my thing, right? Like yeah. Amy Wilson just had like this value sheet that she was showing me. We were just talking before I got here. And in the value sheet, you can only pick two things, but the value sheet has like 40 things on it. And we're going to do it this week at Camp Fi. So you're actually going to expose to this.
Oh, cool.
And it's so funny because I have the same value for years. It just like the two things that pop out at me, there's like a bunch of things like justice and like environmental and all these things. I'm like, fuck all that shit. Adventure and yeah. community. Oh. Like those are like whatever version of adventure is on those things. It can be like curiosity, adventure, that like those are my things, right? So I spend a lot of money going out into the world, but that might not be your value system. So the whole point is that someone can ask you those questions to be like, hey, do you want to travel the US, but maybe you want to travel the world and there's something stopping you from doing that from an experience you've had or something, mm-hmm. right? Anyhow.
Yeah, good. And there's a quick reference, which we could take it offline later, but it's Georgie, our dog.
Oh, duh. Of course.
Yeah. And she, I haven't talked to you, but she got really sick in like May.
Mm.
We thought she was going to die, but she's doing a little better. She was harassing you upstairs, I think, for a little bit. So, but she's 13 and a half, and we know we're not going to have her forever. And then after that, basically between our last dog and Georgie, we only took like 6 months.
Yeah.
And now we're like, oh, we could basically like travel wherever we want, whenever we want.
However long you want, right?
Huge difference. And she's like, she's so old and we treat her like, we're so codependent.
Yeah, she's your princess.
Yeah.
It's funny because that's why I had kids and not a dog, is that I can bring them. I could travel with them.
Yeah.
It's not fun all the time, but it's okay.
They're only slightly different from what I understand.
Yeah. I think they're very comparable, as we've talked about many times. I will just say that the Fi cleaner in our community, Angelica, is incredible. Yeah. She is literally the best. I had Airbnbs. I know what cleaners are capable of and how shit they can be.
Yeah,
she is literally the most amazing cleaner and she's so wonderful.
Give me the info today and we'll test it out.
You'll never go back.
There's
I tested
no harm.
it out. 3 years ago and it never stopped.
One test. All right. What do you got next?
Okay. I think this is my struggle. Doug, what is the difference between like one more year syndrome and just really loving contributing to the world? And I don't know if that means a job or making money or volunteering, but like, what is that difference? Because I struggle with this a lot because I think partly it is my own life. I was, my parents are Scientologists. In Scientology, one of the tenets, I would say, is to be a productive member of society. And so, and I think I've said that like 3 years ago on this podcast. And so I don't know if my wanting to contribute to the world is just a like trauma response to some religion cult put on me, and or that is just who I am. And I'll just say this, watching my oldest son navigate the world, he is me, where he's always involved in things, always like trying to fix something and do something. And so I see that's a personality trait. That perhaps maybe that's what the question is that when we say one more year syndrome, we're actually talking to different personalities. That some people are like, you, your personality, you're much more chill than I am, is like, I'm cool with not doing that piece. And my personality is like, fuck yeah, let's get it. Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I used to be like that.
Right.
So like you too could be as chill as me now.
I think sometime. I can.
Yeah.
I'm planning. I have a whole thing. I'm not going to say it on air, but I have a plan to like get more chill.
Yeah.
And it's like a 2 year plan, actually. It goes into 2028, part of the Antarctica thing. I'm curious for who I will be at the end of this plan.
Yeah. I think the opening somewhat rhetorical question, although I'm going to answer it.
Please.
So I think the difference with one more year syndrome and wanting to contribute to the world slash be productive slash work is something that gives you purpose. I think one more year syndrome is often rooted in scarcity and the numbers. So there,
agreed.
There's a little bit of nuance there. And the thing is, if you keep moving the goalpost, if a little bit more is good, then a little bit more from that new future amount will also be good. Yeah. So it's a never ending, it just keeps moving. So at some point, sometimes people hit a certain amount and then they're like, okay, now I'm good. But it was, you know, something else to your point. As far as like wanting to contribute, so you mentioned Scientology. So, I mean, I think most of the religions say, oh, you really need to work hard. Mm-hmm. So big puritanical bullshit. Yeah. I'm not religious, by the way, in case you didn't catch it. But
and tithing, right? People have to work to be able to tithe.
Right.
So I didn't even put that together till just this moment right now. But if we don't need to get into actual religious stuff. But so, okay. Yeah.
So most religions are like, if you want to, I haven't studied religion in a little while, but I mean, working hard helps get you into heaven.
Right.
Right. So like that's part of it. And depending on the church that you go to, they may emphasize it more than others.
Right.
So like to your point, like it's really good to have like a congregation that's earning money and that is able to contribute, which is totally cool. If anyone's religious out there, respect. Most of my family is religious. And I think it's fine if like part of someone's personality is like, I want to do stuff and I want to be productive. And I think I have heard even some of my friends mention like, I want to be a productive member of society. And I'm like, maybe the most productive thing for me to do is not take a job from someone else who actually needs it.
I agree. Actually, I'm fully in agreement with that. That like people who are like, oh, like get out of the way so other people can do it. Right.
Yeah.
Totally agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that part. And then because we've saved money and we were talking about lifestyle creep and I'm buying stuff, like I'm paying taxes and I'm like buying things and I'm like keeping, you know, some cash flow happening. And that seems like a good thing overall. Yeah. As far as like working, I used to say that I was going to keep working. and I was self-employed for about 10 years.
Yep.
Technically, I still am, but I've like turned the revenue, I turned off all my products. So it's very minimal at this point. But I was like, I like working. I like earning money. Mm-hmm. I find it enjoyable to earn money. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. I don't think that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think when it was easy and fun, I was like, yeah, cool. But now that I have enough, mm-hmm. I'm like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's fun to earn money if it's easy. As soon as you put a little hurdle in front of me, I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. Now, that said, technically, this podcast and the other one that I do, it's work.
Oh, yeah.
I have shaped as much of it as I can. So it's fun, like this conversation we're having, but there's still admin and there's still other stuff to deal with.
Of course.
So it's not all fun. All that to say, like, this is a little piece of work and creativity that gives me a good outlet. It's social and it fits in a couple of buckets that are important to me.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as I got to a point where I didn't need to earn money anymore, I was like, oh yeah, that work that I was doing is dumb and I'm going to stop it. And it's not important to me anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't give a shit.
Right.
And I don't feel worse about myself because I'm not contributing to society.
Right. Essentially, your identity at some point was coupled with that work. And then now you are no longer coupled with that work. And so you can do something else and redefine who you are. And part of it is a podcaster. And then I'd be curious when Georgie maybe passes away in the future and you're starting to travel, maybe you do get a travel bug internationally, this won't work anymore either, right? So you might have to let this go or change what this looks like as well so that it can accommodate the new person that you are. And that will be a struggle that you'll have to go through because this is a part of who you are. And right. So then you have to continue moving forward and like, okay, and evolve, right?
Yep. Oof. And the thing is, like, over the years, like, I slowly stepped away from stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as connected to this as one might think or that I would have predicted.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, Elizabeth was like, you're kind of tied to the podcaster identity. And I was like, oh, you know what? You're right. So I actually separated from that a little bit.
Yep.
So it could be easier to walk away.
Yes. I understand that. And almost like you had practice too, like, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And that's what I think I'm practicing in my life is starting to let things go so that I can walk away from bigger things too, right?
Yeah.
And that may be W2 work, that may be something else, right, in the future. But like, that is, I think you need little practices, which is why you need to like constantly challenge yourself. Like this entire episode, I feel is like just challenge yourself to something new.
Evolve.
Yeah, precisely. Because if you don't, like, I don't know. I guess I'll say it, but like, I don't think that's a great life. Mm-hmm. I think we are better. There are times in our life we shouldn't challenge ourselves. You have a new kid or like maybe you're training your dog because we always want to, you know, equate the two. first 6 months of having whatever thing, new thing in your life is maybe the time that everything sits still, right? But then you can slowly start to get back into the world and kind of like express yourself and find out who you are with the new thing and worth where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's what's missing. I'll just say, I think to wrap this up, not necessarily, but like to wrap this up is that I think that what we think in the FI community is we did get those early bloggers with their ideas of FI. And I think that they got put into a box that they can't even evolve from. And so if they can't evolve from it, then how do we as a community evolve from it unless we have new people saying new things? Or being honest with their experiences of what that looked like. And until we do that and we follow the new way, which is 5 years later, what are you actually doing? Who are you? What does your family look like? Or new people who are doing it a bit differently, like, I'm going to say me, but like not from the influencer part, but just from like, oh, it turns out I am spending $120,000 a year. That would be like blasphemy in old FI. But I want to give people permission that it's a journey. And I think when we look at it from one perspective and one time frame, even those people have had a journey. I think that's just what it is. But we keep looking and reading the same blog posts from 15 years ago.
Yeah. And I think it's hard to follow. It's hard to follow whenever you're on the show and you make a good closing statement like that. I'll add one thing, and that's like, it'll be interesting to go back in a few years and listen to this because I know both of us will have changed our mind and we're like, I can't believe we said that back then. And that's one thing that's been consistent with me, like over the years, I'm like, I think I have stuff figured out. And then a few years later, I realize I'm a fucking moron. And then now at this point, I realize that I know when I look back in a few years that I will say that and I'm just a fucking moron sometimes. Like, I don't know what I don't know.
Well, 100%, right? But I actually think that you yourself and probably me as well, I think we're open to that, which means that this actually, this podcast itself is everlasting because though I may not have a cleaner in 5 years, I may talk about what the new thing is because I was talking about the new thing today, right? What my obligations and my things are, and I'll have grown. But I think that spark of curiosity and adventure still stays with me through all of the episodes. Does that make sense? Is that the margarita or is that real?
It's both. Yeah. It's both of those. All right. Always a ton of fun. Yeah. Where can people find you?
AmberlyGrant.com. Come on a cruise. I am happy to book any cruise and or vacation for you with Fi Travel LLC. Just reach out on my website and yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Fi podcast and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right. So we haven't caught up in a while. Like, I think I passed you at some event, but the last time we talked at length was a couple months ago before a few trips. And speaking of trips, I hear you have a new venture. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I have a business. Surprise, surprise. I've tipped my toes into something else. As we know, I already do all these cruising things. And before I was using a travel advisor. So shout out. Thank you for helping me with all those first early cruises. But during that process, I realized like I'm doing so much of the communication. I'm doing so much of the learning anyways of the platforms and all this stuff that this is maybe something I should just take on myself for the group cruises that I do. And so I decided to start a travel business called Fi Travel LLC. And essentially, I am happy to book anyone's travel in the Fi community. And everyone's like, cool, travel agent, you're just going to make my trip more expensive. But that is not the case. You may not know. Do you like use a broker for your healthcare stuff? Or do you go do it yourself?
We don't use a broker. Elizabeth does it. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a couple things in this world that you pay for as a consumer. And you pay the same price, whether someone's helping you to do it or not. And one of those things is cruises. And one of those things is healthcare, choosing your healthcare policy. So when you book a cruise on your own, you just say you're paying $1,000 per person, so $2,000 for a room. If you were to come with me, I would get you the same $2,000 room. I would get a commission. And then normally I get a perk for you. So either on one of the cruises I just recently did for someone who's going in Europe, I got them a free night beforehand worth $400. So they get a free hotel and a free night, and they wouldn't have gotten that going right to like the Avalon website. I actually am doing a group cruise for someone on Princess going to Alaska and doing awesome Glacier Bay. And I just got them group pricing and I saved literally $900 per person for a 16 person cruise. Like 16 people are going. So I don't even know what that math is, and I won't, it's right. Over $12,000. I know that, yeah, right? Yeah. Just by working with me. There are two things that people can do as well, which is cool. It's like you, like we're DIYers in the Fi community, hence Elizabeth doing your healthcare stuff.
Yeah.
People don't really like to outsource, I think, a lot of that control to other people. And so one thing you can do too, when you work with someone like a travel advisor, is you can just book your own trip. So you can like book your own cruise and then you transfer it to me before final payment within like 30 or 60 days of booking it. And I'll still get you the perks. So you can like do all your like little nitty gritty, like travel planning stuff that we like to do in this community, including myself. And then I can just give you some money on the back end from doing it. So yeah, that's what I'm doing now. And I actually really hope that I get enough people. I do have a lot of individual bookings and I'm happy to do groups for people, but I'm actually trying to replace my current income, like not my full income, because I'll probably, I mean, think big, Amberly. I don't think I would replace that completely in any way, but just enough to like do my living costs and then I can quit my job completely.
Right.
Yeah. Hopefully they didn't hear that, but that's fine.
It's a really big show. They might hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. I know I have heard similar things. Is it mostly with cruises?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The cruises themselves are the ones that are like easy match for match, and you just get more with going through an advisor. Hotels and business class flights, I can definitely get cheaper business class flights for people, but everyone hacks flights. So like, why would you go for that?
Yeah.
You
know? We don't do a ton of that. Like,
you drive everywhere. You don't fly
much. Do. Yeah. Primarily, like occasionally, it's mostly for like international stuff, right? Yeah. That's like where it comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, that's great.
Yeah. And hotels too. Like we all use Hyatt, right? So like, that's the cool thing about using a travel advisor within the space is that like, I know what you want. Like, I know you want value and quality, right? Like, I know you want like the cheapest room, but not the one beside the like ice machine.
Right.
You want like the second cheapest room, right? Yeah. Or some you want the best room.
I'm
I was going to say. And then there are people who will surprise you who like literally want the best. And I love that like variance because I like to learn people. And then I just know who you are and I'll be like, oh, I know what type of room you want. So like I know, there's like one person I know. I'm like, I know what room they'll always want on a cruise or wherever.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. And what do you have to do to get, is it a license or something like that for, what is this?
Yeah, it's like an unregulated it's like a real estate thing. Actually, no, it's worse than a real estate thing. So you don't have to get a proper license. You do training and then you connect with a host agency. There are a lot of different types of host agencies. So they're like MLM types where you can have people under you and that kind of thing. And then there are host agencies that actually cater to proper travel advisors who are doing groups and have really good relationships with suppliers. And that's like, it depends. If you want to like DIY your own trips, sometimes those third party ones like Fora and, you know, you see them on Instagram, those are good for like your individual stuff. But like what I do, like I pay a monthly fee, I pay like E&O insurance. And like, you wouldn't want to do that for like your own hacking, your own travel. Mm-hmm. So you have to like pass a test and then connect with the host agency.
And then pay.
And then pay. Exactly. So I'm like, it's not that hard. It's just, it's all the learning afterwards that like you have to learn every supplier and all the quirks and the stuff.
Got it.
How to book them. And you can imagine a cruise line isn't a tech company. So their interface to like book things.
Yeah.
Can be quite challenging.
It's like from 2007.
Oh, yeah. When was the internet created? Like way before that? Yeah. That's like it. Like they had someone develop it a long time ago on Wix and then they like never come back to it.
Yeah. You have to call in. You have to fax things.
I literally, one was like fax or email. And I was like, thank God there was an email on that one because I do not want to go find a fax machine on a Friday holiday weekend. So I just actually transferred someone's booking over to mine. Over my agency. And so I'll give them some onboard credit and things like that. And we just did that form to fax, to not fax, thankfully. I fill it out for everyone and they can just sign it easily. So literally you just need a signature and then I do it for you.
Got it.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's my pitch. Thanks.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right.